The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
It's Tuesday in the East, Monday in the West, and some of you are stuck somewhere in between. Welcome to Beyond Reality Radio with me, Jason Hawes, and the always awesome JV Johnson.
That didn't sound like it flowed out as smoothly as it used to. Well, you haven't said that in a while, have you?
You had to rub that in, didn't you?
You haven't said that in a long time.
I haven't, and it's so weird because it's been 4.5-5 months that I have not been here, man.
It's been a long time. It really has. Now, you've been up to, I was going to say no good, but you've been up to a lot of good. You've been working pretty hard on this new series.
Well, I'm always up to no good.
Well, there's always that. the new series, Ghost Nation, that's October debut, right?
Oh, man, it is phenomenal. Honestly, it's such a blast because the folks over at Travel Channel have been just incredible to deal with, to work with. And I did Ghost Hunters for so long, and it was always such a, dealing with the network and always them trying to have their hands in it. Travel Channel has just been like, hey, you guys know what you're doing. Just do what you're doing. Do it how you do it and just bring it to us. And, we ended up hiring in Ping Pong Productions, which is the same company that does Josh Gates's Expedition Unknown.
Right.
And Brad over there and them, they're just phenomenal people. But the people at Travel Channel are just incredible. They really are. And it's been such a fun experience. It really has.
Well, it seems refreshing. You and I were talking before the broadcast and been talking over the last few months. And it's nice to actually have a partner that you're working with, and as far as a network goes, that you feel is actually a partner and not just, someone who's whatever.
Well, exactly. And our relationship is a direct partnership with the network. It's not where a lot of times people are hired in by a production company or they're working for a production company. We're not. And I think that also sets the whole thing aside. Myself, Steve, we're executive producers on the show. We're owners of the show. And like I said, it's been a blast just getting back to basics and doing what we always love to do. We're investigating homes. We're helping out people who need help, whether it's families who are terrified of their homes or children or whatever. And that's what it was all about. It was never about all these big locations. So, we're excited. And October 11th, 9 p.m. Eastern, it is when our series premieres shows. I'm excited, man. I really am.
Yeah, you should be. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And I just feel so out of my element right now.
Just so everybody knows, too, later in the program for the last segment, probably about 1:40 or so a.m. in the East Coast, we are going to take phone calls if you want to call. And we'll talk about Ghost Nation a little bit more in detail. And if you have questions or you want to make comments, that would be the time to do that for that particular discussion, because we'd love to hear what people think.
Yeah. And then I even got a chance to go hang out on that Doll Island out in Mexico, Jim.
Yeah, I texted you something and you responded, I'll get back to you, I'm in Mexico. I'm like, what?
I couldn't talk. I was having a hard enough time understanding what people were saying out there, but it was great to actually get out there and see that place. For everything that I've heard about it through so many years, it was an interesting location, and you can't imagine how small it really is.
Was that an episode for the show, or was that something different?
No, that was a top secret thing. But just getting out there and checking out the place, it was just a phenomenal experience.
Before we get too much further here, I just want to let people know we've got Rob Young joining us in a little bit. He'll be our guest tonight. He's an author and an adventurer. He'll be talking about the Cloud Warriors of Peru, Poisons from the Jungle, and his own personal paranormal experiences. And we'll bring him in just a little while. By the way, tomorrow night, I don't know if you happen to see this for tomorrow night, Jay, Chris Newby will be here to talk about shedding new light on the genesis of Lyme disease and its Cold War origins.
And there's a lot of controversy on that one because a lot of people believe that it started right over here near me.
That's
in
right.
Lyme, Connecticut, and that there was a plant. Well, we do know that there was some sort of a plant that they were doing testing on Block Island and different areas like that. So it'd be interesting to find out what they have to say.
Yeah, I'm excited about that discussion, too. We've talked about it. We actually had a guest on that was talking about having some ancillary knowledge about the weaponization of the virus that causes or the bacteria that causes Lyme disease. And so we said, we got to find somebody that can come on and talk about this. And Chris Newby is a science writer, and she answered the call. So we're looking forward to doing that.
And I see Wednesday, you're going right up my alley again. We're going to be talking with Douglas Cirignano, author of American Conspiracies and Cover-Ups. And we're going to be covering conspiracies and pretty much transforming U.S. politics for the last century and a lot of interesting things.
So one thing we need to mention before it gets too late here is that obviously there's a very, very dangerous situation. It's already hit the Bahamas and it's brewing and heading toward Florida at this point. And of course, we're talking about Hurricane Dorian, 5 people dead at this point in the Bahamas. Yeah. I mean, this is a monumental storm, Category 5, Category 4 right now, I believe. And they expect it to hit the Florida coast sometime Tuesday. They're not exactly sure where it's going to be, but they've said they are looking to evacuate as much as 105 miles of the Florida coast line. And they're saying if you are in this evacuation area, you really need to heed these warnings and get the heck out of there.
Well, and you know, I had taken the family on a Satori graduated, and the one thing she wanted to do was go to the Bahamas. So we went down as a family vacay, and I've been seeing videos of where we went, and it's just decimated. It's destroyed. Well, I can't imagine.
Yeah, the storm just parked itself there, and
it just sat there.
Still very slow moving, so it just continued to pummel the residents and the islands, and that's the worst kind of storm. You know, the wind speed is dangerous enough, but when you have it just sitting there for a day and a half, it just compounds the damage.
Well, they were saying they had 23-foot surges, and that's just mind-boggling. I don't know.
It is. They say about as many as 13,000 homes in the Bahamas have been destroyed or severely damaged. This is a very, very dangerous storm. There are 9 counties in Florida that have mandatory evacuations. One of them is in the Jacksonville area, also Palm Beach County. And the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, has urged coastal residents to heed these evacuations. And he says the orders, and he says, get out now while there's time and there's still fuel available. Because if you decide that, you know, tomorrow, an hour before the storm hits, you're going to try to get out of there, you may not be able to get any gas. You know, the stores will be all closed and there won't be anything available for you and you're stuck.
Well, let alone trying to get out at the last moment, you're going to be stuck in just
traffic
stop
too,
and go yeah. traffic. Yeah. And you and I have been down that way many times and it gets bad, let alone when everybody's trying to get out of there at once. So the least thing you want to do is be stuck in a car on a highway.
And in about an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes, Orlando International Airport will be closing because of the storm. Walt Disney World in Orlando will close early on Tuesday, it said in a statement. People are taking this very, very seriously. Thoughts, prayers to everyone in this storm's path. Please do the right thing. Be safe. Get out if you've been told to.
Yeah, you are definitely in our prayers. And best of luck to you all. So what have you been doing while I've been gone?
I've just been kind of staying the course here, you know, talking to a lot of interesting people on the radio, riding my motorcycle around when I can
you,
do that.
You have. You've been riding.
Yeah, I've been riding quite a bit. I actually put several thousand miles on the bike this summer, and I bought it at when was that? End of June. So I haven't, you know, I didn't even have it the whole summer. So been having a lot of fun with that, actually.
Oh, that's nice. And yeah. I do got to say thank you so much for holding down the fort while I've been on the road doing this stuff. And, I couldn't think of anybody better to do that.
Well, thanks. It's been fun. We've had a lot of fun here. So I'm just waiting for you to come back.
Yep. All right. So on that note, you want to take a quick break and get our guest on the line?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. You'll listen to Jason and JV, Beyond Reality Radio. We'll be back after this.
Look out, Rochester. Scaricon is coming for you. The Northeast's leading fan convention for all things pop culture is celebrating its 9th year at the Rochester Riverside Hotel, October 18th through the 20th. Scaricon brings an amazing group of celebrities, panel discussions, film screenings, great vendors, and amazing parties. It's a weekend of fun from start to finish, and it's family friendly. For more information, visit Scaricon.com and check us out on Facebook. Use the promo code BRR at checkout to save 20% on your admission. That's Scaricon.com, October 18th through the 20th in Rochester, New York.
We're going to be talking about adventuring. We're going to be talking about the Cloud Warriors of Peru, poisons from the jungle, and personal paranormal experiences with our guest, author and adventurer, Rob Young. Rob, welcome to Beyond Reality Radio. Great to have you here tonight.
Hey, well, thank you. Thank you for having me out.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. I see that you are many, many things, but you consider yourself among probably the top of the list, a storyteller.
Yeah, actually, that's being a storyteller is what got me started writing novels. I started this process actually with a Christmas present to my two oldest grandkids, who are now in their 20s. But I gave them, when they were, third, fourth grade, I gave them Thursdays with Grandpa. And I'd pick them up after school and take them to an ice cream place and ruin their dinner. And then tell them stories. We started a whole series of pirate stories. And, of course, I was the primary character, but I wove them into it, and they became characters. And this went on for an entire school year. And we had a ball doing it. They started bringing their friends. It got expensive after a while because I was buying a lot of ice cream. But a few years later, when they were probably in their early teens, they said, Grandpa, did you ever write those down? And I didn't. And so that got me thinking that maybe I ought to start writing stories. And that's how it all started.
So to start with pirate stories, was there something that inspired you in that direction? Or was that just what you thought might appeal to a couple young boys?
No, it actually, I spent a lot of time in the Caribbean in the late 1900s and early 2000s, and because I love history, became quite a student of pirate lore, and so I had a fair amount of historical data or at least what passed for historical data. And so I could build off of that and make up my stories as I went along based upon that experience and then my imagination, and then it sort of took on a life of its own. That's my storytelling, start of being a storyteller anyway.
Right, so telling stories is one thing. Putting them down on paper and having them published is a completely different thing and takes a lot more commitment to the craft. When did you start doing that?
About 12, 13, 14 years ago. And it was quite a lesson, an object lesson. I was a newspaper writer for about 7 years, and then I went to law school because I figured I didn't have any talent as a newspaper writer. So then I practiced law for a long time, and you do a lot of writing as a lawyer. So when I started writing these down, I thought, well, this can't be that hard. I mean, I was a newspaper writer for quite a while, and I did all this legal writing and all this sort of stuff, So I wrote the first novel, I didn't quite finish all of it, because I realized along the way I had no idea what I was doing, and I stuffed it in a drawer, hoping that it would never come to light, and no one would ever be able to associate it with me, or I wouldn't ruin the literary world in general by having it read. And then later on, I wrote a second one, and I didn't have that one published because I didn't think it was any good. And I started really taking the craft seriously probably about 6 to 8 years ago, and started taking a lot of classes and going to a lot of seminars and listening to a lot of webinars. And Cloud Warriors is actually the third novel that I wrote, and it was the first one that I thought was, in my own mind, was good enough for public consumption.
Well, and I can say, as a guy who's written books as well, I've had 6 books published, you never feel like what you're writing down is going to be that interesting for those reading it. And so it's always one of those things that is a big concern as an author. And until it gets out there and people really start enjoying it, and then you're sort of mind blown with the whole experience.
That's true. People say generally, wow, you really can write, you're a real writer, and that's very flattering, because truthfully, I didn't write Cloud Warriors, or any of the following novel that's out, or the ones that I'm in the process of writing now, with the idea that it was going to be a bestseller, or that I was going to be rich and famous. I was just like to tell stories, and this is a different way of doing it, and it's obviously a lot more intricate than telling them orally.
We have about a minute here before we have to jump to our first break. You have two books out at this point. Cloud Warriors is one of them. We're going to be talking about that one and the inspiration for that. And the other is The Reaper. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And which one came out first, Cloud Warriors?
Cloud Warriors came out first, yes.
Did you write The Reaper prior to Cloud Warriors, or did you write it afterward?
Actually, I wrote it prior to Cloud Warriors, but then I rewrote it completely while I was waiting for Cloud Warriors to sort of work its way through the publishing process.
And, you know, in addition to, and you probably don't have enough time to answer this completely, but we'll pick it up on the other side of the break. You are also a bit of an adventurer. You've been all over the world.
Yeah, I've been lucky in that respect. I always quote Count Rostov from A Gentleman in Moscow, the very good bestseller from a year ago. That's, he said, the world has been good to me in its variety. And I've had a chance to sample a lot of it over the years, and I've found amazing stories and adventures. And mostly that's where I find the underpinning of my books, is from something I've learned in my travels.
Our guest tonight, Rob Young, is an author and an adventurer. His website is Rob Young, that's Young, J-U-N-G, robyoungwriter.com, and his books are Cloud Warriors and The Reaper. And Rob, one of the things that's pretty interesting here is that a lot of the basis for you know, what you've gone on to do has some roots in what we'd be considered to be some paranormal experiences. Well, tell us about your paranormal experiences.
It started actually unexpectedly and with some skepticism. In the house that my wife and I lived in some time ago, she used to travel a great deal, and that's how I came to travel. She traveled for work. I tagged along and got to play while she worked. But she brought back from one of her trips to East Africa a series of paintings. And one of the paintings... we have them up on a wall in our house in Minnesota, and one of the paintings would make very strange sounds, and we joked about it it being haunted. It being the painting was of a native African man, and very interesting, but it made these sort of crackling noises whenever we would, you know, be in the room with it. So we talked about that. And then from that, there was another time when, much to my amazement, I was sitting at a counter in our kitchen, and a glass half full with water sort of drifted across the counter on its own and tipped over and spilled. I was completely sober. So that wasn't the issue, but that one surprised me. And then also once in that same house, my dad, who had died of cancer three years before, suddenly appeared in an apparition to me, and said, I'm leaving. Like he'd been hanging around out there in the netherworld for quite some time, a few years anyway. But he was announcing that this was it, I guess. And all those things sound really strange when I say them, but they all happened. And then interestingly, when we moved from that house into another house, we took our haunted painting with us, but the ghost wasn't there anymore. The crackling sounds didn't happen, and so that went away. So I have to assume that there was something in the house that we lived in that was amenable to some sort of paranormal activity. Nothing spooky any great in volume, but there were things that did happen.
Well, and it almost sounds like you're saying that something from the house was actually fueling this, giving these things the ability to happen. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, in hindsight, because nothing like that happened after we moved in either of the other two houses we've lived in since then, I think that's a fair assumption.
Now, was that
something in that location?
Was that house near any large area of water or near high limestone deposits or anything of that nature?
No. The only water it was next to was a swimming pool in the backyard.
Oh, okay.
And so there wasn't anything that you would attach that to, but it nevertheless had its unexplainable quirks. Let's put it that way. Unexplainable by sort of standard reasoning and science.
Well, and I like how you said your father actually came to you and said that it was his time. He was going to move on. So there was direct communication, as if there was some intelligence there.
Yeah, and it was brief, but it wasn't audible. But I saw the apparition, if you will, clearly my dad, and sensed or heard internally anyway his words.
Were you awake were you awake at the time, or was it near falling asleep or waking up, or at what point in the day did that occur?
It was in the evening. I had just gone to bed. I was not yet asleep, and suddenly I sensed something at the end of the bed, and I looked up, and there it was. There he was.
Did that comfort you?
You know, I don't know that it comforted me. It certainly caught me off guard, and it made me a little surprised. But it didn't. It didn't comfort me, nor did it disturb me.
It's one of those things that give you mixed emotions. Like I can sit there and say that I was sitting in my studio one day, and my father had passed away in November, and sitting in my studio, my door is actually a piston door, so it closes itself, and for whatever reason, that door opened inward, which seems impossible.
Has to go against the piston.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was a few months after my father had passed away, but it was, even with that happening, initially I didn't think my dad, but then all of a sudden I got a feeling like I always felt around my father. So, and it was one of those things where he wasn't really comforting or any closure, but it was just, it was a feeling that he was there, and that meant the world to me.
Yeah, I understand. There's another, I'll relate another event that had nothing to do with that house. But it was also, my wife watched it and one of our neighbors did. But a couple of summers ago, my dad died and my mom, remarried. My mom and dad were married for 51 years when my dad died from prostate cancer. And my mom remarried, and she was married to my stepdad for 17 years. Great guy. And then he passed away. And then eventually my mom, just about 10 days before her 98th birthday, passed away. And that was 2 or 3 years ago. Well, we're still standing out in a front yard, and suddenly these two butterflies, and I can only describe it as a dance. In fact, I wrote about it in a blog. But these two butterflies did this miraculous dance. They were monarch butterflies. And the two of them would come apart or go apart and then come back together. And this went on for 20 minutes, maybe. And I just had the sense, people say I'm crazy, but I had the sense it was my mom and dad, basically reuniting in that kind of a setting, in that kind of a form. They were both great naturalists, and my mother was a great lover of butterflies, and it just seemed like it wasn't an apparition of my dad, but it was a sense that there was a whole lot more going on there than just two butterflies.
We're gonna take a break just in a couple of minutes, but I want to ask you one more question about this painting that made noise. You said it made a crackling noise. Was it like the fabric of the painting crackling, or was it? Did it sound like a metallic crackling? I mean, can you give us a little more description of what you heard?
It was. I would say, take your two thumbnails and put them together, mm-hmm. and make that, you know, and then push so one hard against the other.
Kind of a ticking, clicking
yeah,
sound.
Kind of that clicking sound. It was neither metallic nor, you know, or crackling paint or anything like that. It was kind of like that clicking sound.
Did the painting have any kind of history that you're aware of?
I do not know. My wife bought it from a street artist mm-hmm. in, I think it was Nairobi. And that's all I know about it.
Wow. Well,
I mean, I've asked her about it, but she bought all three of them at the same time. She liked I think they're watercolors. Mm-hmm. But it was just the one that did that. And it was the only one with a male character in it. And he was dressed quite oddly for an African native in fur. And it's just we still have it hanging in our house.
And just not making any noise anymore.
but it doesn't crackle at us anymore.
Probably more important than those experiences for you when it came to writing your books was your adventures around the globe, and particularly Peru. Let's talk about Peru a little bit.
Okay. I've been to Peru multiple times, five or six, and primarily because my wife worked in Peru for 8 years and used to go two or three times a year, and every once in a while I'd tag along with her. And in the process of doing that, I became very intrigued by the Incan culture, particularly by their agricultural and architectural capabilities, and also their knowledge and understanding of astronomy, which was awesome, considering where it was in history. But it was remarkable, and it was through those travels in Peru and visiting Incan ruins, if you will, sites, that I became aware of a rather odd historical anomaly that part of the Incan Empire were a confederation of small tribes that lived at the very top of the Andes Mountains in the clouds. The Incan civilization called them the Chachapoyas, which that's a Quechua word when translated to English, either is cloud people or cloud warriors. That's the name of the book. But the fact that you've got, that made them unusual was that they were light-skinned, fair-haired, and blue-eyed, which isn't what you'd expect in that part of the world, you know. Doesn't fit with the rest of the indigenous population. And so it was from that piece of knowledge that the kernel of the story Cloud Warriors arose.
Well, so blonde hair and blue-eyed in that area, of course, that's extremely rare. So were they not originally from that area?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, the Vikings raped and pillaged everywhere in the world, so who knows what happened. But they were, as far as we know, they were originally, they have no written history. The only history we have of them is based on the ruins of where they lived in the Andes Mountains, and what has sort of trickled down through the knowledge of the Incans. Incans conquered that confederation about 100 years before Pizarro came and laid waste to the Incan Empire. So it was, in historical terms, it was a fairly short period of time, but there's no record of them coming from any place else. How they got there, I don't know. I should say that in my research, I found two other similar anomalies. One is a tribe called the Nemadi that lives in the Sahara Desert, east of Morocco. And again, a very small group of people, but they are also fair-skinned and you know, light-haired and blue-eyed. And then there's another group, and their names escapes me right now, but they live in Afghanistan. And so it's not a single isolated instance, but I didn't learn about them until long, in my research relative to the Chachapoyas.
So there are a few pockets around the world of what would be considered anomalous people that don't have the same physical characteristics as the indigenous population around them. And do any of these three in your research have any more detailed history that we can draw some inferences from, or are they all equally mysterious?
They're all equally mysterious. Now, I will have to say that I didn't try to dig real deeply into the other two groups of people that I came across. So, I can't say with any authority that there's now more history there, but from what I read, they all seem to be equally mysterious. They sort of pop up out of nowhere, and they've been in those areas for centuries, and then, modern history, I guess, somehow uncovers them, and we're aware that they exist. The Chachapoyas, I think, except in my book, which is fictional, of course, have been absorbed into the rest of the population in Peru and Ecuador.
We have about a minute here. We have about a minute here before we have to go to break, and I want to get one more question in, and we'll continue the conversation on the other side of the break. But does the name Cloud Warriors or Chachapoya, does that have a significance related to the fact they lived in the Andes Mountains, or could there be something more mysterious about the origin of that name?
Well, I would never say never. The name is strictly, when you translate it, just sort of describes where they come from. Because literally their civilization was in the clouds at the very top of the Andes Mountains. How they got there is really mysterious. I will say one thing. There is a picture that I have seen of, I haven't actually seen it, but there is a picture of a statue made out of stone from that civilization. And I suppose it may be my imagination, but I think it looks an awful lot like a Viking.
And Rob, we were talking about the Cloud Warriors. We're talking about these the Chachapoya people and the fact that they are anomalous in their genetic, well, at least their appearance. I don't know about their genetics. I can't speak about that. You know, there's been talk for a very, very long time about a possible extraterrestrial presence with the Incas and in other parts of the world. Do you think, you've talked about the Vikings, but do you think there's any possibility that there could be some type of extraterrestrial explanation for people as anomalous as these people were?
I would never say never. There is, as you pointed out, particularly with respect to Machu Picchu, an ongoing theory that there was extraterrestrial intervention and perhaps guidance that led to the building of that rather remarkable series of structures at the top of a mountain that almost is incomprehensible to explain how this could be done by human beings at that juncture in history. So could there be? Absolutely. How or why or, how it came about, I wouldn't have any idea. But I certainly, I've learned over many years that I'm not smart enough to determine what the limits of possibility are. And so I think there is always the possibility that there is another level, another. To me, it's like playing three-dimensional chess. There are other dimensions that we human beings, with our very limited ability to understand and reason, do not understand. And so, I think to a great extent, we fill that void in our understanding with what we popularly call religion. So that's a long story, a long answer to a short question.
So, your feeling is there's something else out there that could definitely have its hands in the creation of that.
I think the answer to that is yes.
And also, and we're talking about Peru, of course, Peru also the home of the Nazca Lines, which has a very mysterious origin, and many think that might be extraterrestrial in nature. Now, when you started writing about the Cloud Warriors of Peru, I'm sure you're not writing about an extraterrestrial story here. What's the story about?
Well, the story is really in a nutshell, it's my rant against the greed of the pharmaceutical industry. And I coach it in the terms of this fictional battle between a remnant of this Chachapoyas tribe that survives in the Amazon rainforest for 600 years until discovered by an anthropology professor. It's the battle of survival by that tribe against a pharmaceutical company that's trying to exploit a substance that's peculiar to that particular tribe. So that's really the sort of the elevator speech about what the book is about. But I think the paranormal aspect of it is I had to figure out a way to make two people communicate, one of whom is in a state of astral suspension, and the other of whom is a 100-year-old shaman that lives in Peru in the rainforest and obviously doesn't speak anything close to English. And the character that accomplished that is a medium named Kerry Waters in the book, who in reality is my sister-in-law, who is a medium. And it is much of her life story that is the story of Kerry Waters in Cloud Warriors.
When you talk about the pharmaceutical companies, I think many people have, whether it's been an infomercial or real science or some kind of medical report, they talk about the mysterious compounds that can be found in the rainforest, maybe even in the jungles. And there are many that may have medicinal qualities. Did you use anything that was fact-based or that you can point to that might fit that description?
Yes. Actually, I used a substance that is relatively common knowledge to mystery writers around the world, and that is a poison that it was an arrowhead poison common to the Central and South America for centuries. It's called curare, and curare is odd in the sense that if you get it in your bloodstream, it'll kill you. But you can ingest it, and it doesn't hurt you. So you could use this arrowhead poison, kill an animal, and immediately eat it without any fear of injuring or killing yourself. That's what made it odd. And the other thing that we learned the hard way, Western medicine did, is they thought that because curare renders all your voluntary muscles inert, it actually kills you through suffocation because your lungs won't work. But they thought it was Western medicine for about the turn of the 20th century, thought this was a great way to put people, you know, under while they were doing operations. Unfortunately, under the influence of curare, if you're still alive, you can feel, hear, and see everything that's going on. You just can't respond to it.
Ouch.
So, yes, precisely. So surgery was undertaken with using curare as the anesthetic, only to learn after some period of time, hopefully not too long, that it wasn't an anesthetic. It was just basically a substance that rendered a paralysis.
Well, I would think the first person would come out and tell them. I don't think that would take long at all.
I don't think if they survived.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess my understanding, and this may be an urban myth, but my understanding is the way they learned of this is that a tear trickling down out of an eye of the person they were operating on suddenly made them realize. The surgeons realized that these people were not under, an anesthetic. They were still able to feel.
That's just horrible.
That's what led it. Actually, some derivative of Ferrari is still used in medicine. Still used, not in the same way as it used to, but still used in some surgical procedures.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. So I was just going to say that. So the Ferrari. Every tribe has its own. It's a plant-based poison, but every tribe has its own version of it. And so my particular tribe, the Chilco in the book Cloud Warriors, had this peculiar, because they lived at the top of the Andes, thanks to the migration of an Arctic tern coming from Siberia, which is that's historically correct. A plant was through the feces of that bird. The seeds of a plant were planted on the top of the Andes Mountains during their annual migration, and this plant was then incorporated in this particular tribe's Ferrari, and it was this incorporation of this rather unique plant in their formula that led to the ability of the person who tasted it, limited to the shaman of the tribe, to extend their life expectancy by multiples of 3, 4, 5 times. That's the substance that the pharmaceutical company in Cloud Warriors is seeking to explain.
We are talking tonight with Rob Young, author and adventurer. Rob has a book out called Cloud Warriors. That's what we've been focused on tonight. And Robin, I want to ask you about the Cloud Warrior experiences as you learned about these people and decided to write about them in your book. How did it affect your view of the world, maybe the universe around us?
I think the answer to that would be related to trying to imagine what it would be like to be part of this tribal remnant that is suddenly discovered by the, in the 21st century and in the glare of all that goes with our modern day, is suddenly focused on this group of people that have been living and hiding out, not hiding out in a sense that they were trying to avoid anything, but living in the rainforest secretly for 6 centuries. I think that when you start to think about people like that, and you start to think about their, the symbiosis they must have with their environment to survive, and their own spiritual life that's depicted in the book, it, I think, gives you a broader sense of how the world actually operates on from a natural science, if you will, standpoint, and from a spiritual standpoint, on all levels of human existence. Certainly, we in the world today have all the history and accoutrements that go with living in the 21st century, and when you need to go back and start to think what it would be like for a very secreted group of people 600 years ago, it just broadens your sense of the world in general, and I think it makes you more tolerant.
Tolerance is something that we could use a little more of, I think. At this point.
Amen to that.
What do you want for someone to pick up the book and read it? What do you hope they walk away with?
I hope they, first of all, I hope they walk away saying that was a good story. You know, I enjoyed reading it. It was entertaining. You know, it was worth the price of admission, so to speak. I think that I would like them to walk away with a little more, perhaps, tolerance of the world around us. I think to also raise questions about choices that we make and how those choices not only just impact us, but have the ripple effect of impacting, you know, society in general. So the book has a lesson in it, but it's not championed as you know, as the common thread through the book. The book is basically a story that raises questions that sort of all come to a conclusion at the end, and hopefully the reader will face that and think about what they would do under the same circumstance.
By the way, after our next break, we're going to take your phone calls to talk about the upcoming debut of Ghost Nation on the Travel Channel October 11th. Of course, starring Jason Hawes, Steve Gonzalez, Dave Tango, and you guys traveled all over Hell's Half Acre, I guess, right?
Well, everywhere.
So that show will be debuting on Travel Channel October 11th, and we'll take your phone calls. It's at 844-687-7669 after the next, or you can start calling now, line up the questions. Rob Young is our guest tonight, and Rob, we've been talking about the books, particularly Cloud Warriors, that you've already written, published, and distributed here, but you've got a project underway, or at least it's about to be underway, that sounds pretty interesting, involving, if I read this correctly, Ireland and witch burning?
Yes.
That sounds pretty fascinating.
The working title of that is First Witch. And it's a story I found on a trip to Ireland about 2.5 years ago. And I've been slowly piecing together the story arc for it. But it evolves out of a woman named Alice Keitler, who lived in Kilkenny, who I won't go into detail because of time, but she would have been burned at the stake as the first witch ever, you know, the first witch burned at the stake in Ireland, had she not escaped to England and disappeared. But the story is about a bag of gold that appears to have a curse on it, and Irish gypsies and Charlie Chaplin and a current legal battle in the courts of England over the ownership of this bag of gold that seems oddly to curse everyone that comes in contact with it. Bag of gold coins from the 1300s.
Will this be a novel based on this what we would consider to be legend or true story?
It is a true story. That's how all my books come about. They're all based on some historical incident.
Right.
With Cloud Warriors, it was the odd people that didn't seem to belong where, you know, they were from a physical characteristic standpoint. This one is about a woman who poisoned 4 husbands, allegedly, and thus was thought to be a witch. And the church wanted to burn her, and that's the historical part of it. There's a great pub in Kilkenny called Keitler's Inn. I highly recommend anybody who's interested in witches and ghosts to go there. And Jason, I've got a question for you in your new program, Ghost Nation. Do you end up down in San Antonio at the Menger Hotel just outside of the Alamo?
No, not yet. Not on this first season. Honestly, it's more about trying to get back to residential cases and helping out families that need help. because we did ghost hunters for 12 years, and it was like sci-fi, even though we'd investigate residential homes, sci-fi had a tendency to only show the big locations, and that just got old. So we wanted to make sure we got back to the roots of why we initially started doing what we do, and just started trying to help families.
Congratulations. Welcome back. I'll add my welcome back to everybody else's.
Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
I appreciate it.
Rob, thanks for being here. Again, the books that are out now, Cloud Warriors, The Reaper, where can people get a hold of them?
Well, you can buy them. You can, if they're not at your local bookstore, you can certainly order them. You can get them on Amazon. You can go to my website and order them direct from me, although, I discourage that, because I like to support bookstores. Check your local bookstore, ask for Cloud Warriors or The Reaper by Rob Young, and if they don't have it, they can certainly order it. And if you are so inclined to buy online, then you can get them on Amazon.
Well, Rob, thanks so much for coming and hanging out with us. It's been a pleasure, and we look forward to talking to you again at some point.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me on. I enjoyed it greatly.
As we said before we went to the break, and what we've been talking about all night, is that Jason's returned to the show here. He's been off filming. You were gone for, five months. Filming a new television show.
First season.
The first season of a new show that is going to debut in October on the Travel Channel. It's called Ghost Nation. First question is, where'd the title come from?
Well, honestly, it's because when I was talking to Discovery and Travel Channel about doing a show, one of the main factors I wanted to express was that there's so many more people out there involved in the paranormal than just TAPS. And I wanted to get that out there. There's a nation of investigators and researchers and believers and people, whether they're skeptics or not, whether they're investigators or not, there's all these people. And it's just, and that was one of the things, there's a nation of them out there. And we wanted to make sure that was known, that it's not, because you see the show and it always seems like it's just about either an investigator or their team. And there's so much more than that. So that's where Ghost Nation was born. And also it's really the next step from Ghost Hunters. And we did Ghost Hunters, so.
Let's jump to our phone lines. By the way, the number, if you have a question you want to chat about this at all, is 844-687-7669. This is Darren in Indiana. Hey, Darren, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Great. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. The first time calling in. Been a fan of Jay's for years. Watched the show and really excited about the new show. Can't wait.
Oh,
so, yeah, I could talk all night about all kind of stuff because I've been a fan of the show and been a fan of all this kind of stuff my entire life. On top of making horror films, so people kind of lump that together. But the question I have for Jay is shadow people. My brother had an experience back in 2001. Southern Indiana is a weird place. Let's just put it that way. There's a lot of stuff that happens down here. My brother's kids, some property that my great grandparents' property originally, it's been in my family for years, probably 100 years. And it was just in the daylight, out in the field, and he had his kids for the weekend. He's a divorced parent, and at the time they were really little. And later that day, they were at the pond out on the property, and it was middle of the afternoon and two of the kids had went to the woods, and he was one of the kids at the pond. And so later that night, they said, "Dad, when you were at the pond, before you met us back towards the woods, we saw something." And, he says, "Well, what'd you see?" He said, "Well, we saw a black man. We saw a black man." That's what the kids said. "We saw a black man." And so when my brother's telling me this back, he told me about a year after it happened. He told me in 2002, I thought there was somebody on the property, or I was thinking Sasquatch, or, I was just thinking, well, okay, what was it, So my brother's asking them, and they were drawing pictures of what they saw. And so my brother started doing some looking around, and it was basically what they were talking about is what people had described as shadow people. And, I brought that up to him probably more recently, and he said, the kids were there. Something was sort of breaking the light coming through the trees as they were walking down a tree line. And then this thing came out of the trees and sort of ran in front of them. And it was like a, they described it as a shadow, but walking upright, not on the ground. And, you know, so it ran in front of them, and they sort of froze. And one of the kids told the other one, don't look at it, but they couldn't help but look at it.
Yeah, of course.
And it sort of turned, and so it was almost like a consciousness to it, because it sort of turned and sort of looked, almost like it turned and looked back at them, and then it just ran and just sort of faded off into nothing. And, you know, he's told that story. My brother's very skeptical of it. I totally buy it. But, you know, it was the middle of an open field in the daytime. This wasn't in some dark room or some dark building. This was in the middle of an open, wide open field out in the country. And as the kids got older, you know, he would say, you know, they wouldn't go up there. I mean, these kids are grown up now. They're all in their 20s now. But they would refuse to go up there. So, you know, that is it's one of many things that have happened to, you know, people I know or people I really find to be credible. But that story, you know, still gives me chills.
Cool,
because
yeah.
I can picture that because I spent a lot of time up there.
Darren, are you an investigator at all?
No, not really. I just always had a fascination with all kind of stuff. And you know, like I said, Southern Indiana, for whatever reason, is just, you know, we've there's a lot of UFO stuff. I had a friend, yeah. I won't get into this now because I don't have time, but in 1988,
well, just
had a cattle mutilation.
Just real quick, and not to cut you off, was the question about the shadow people?
Yeah, I mean, what's your take on that,
all right.
Jay?
I mean, yeah, I want to make sure I can get that answer out because we got others. But my main thing is shadow people. There's people. Some people believe that shadow entities are these negative entities. I don't fall under that belief. My belief is, and what I've seen, there seems to be two different types of shadow type entities. There's, for whatever reason, entities that are just shadows, but there's also intelligent type entities like you and I after we pass, and for whatever reason, we can't fully manifest ourselves, and we come across as a shadow type entity. And there's nothing negative to it. There's nothing malicious to it. It's just not being able to fully manifest ourselves. And a lot of times that's what people see. So I just wanted to make sure I got that out for you. Yeah. So honestly, I'm a firm believer in shadow type entities. I just don't feel that they fall under, you know, malicious or negative type entities. But thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah, Darren, thank you so much for listening, and thank you for the phone call. We've got a question from one of our chat room members. Scooter wants to know how long the first season of Ghost Nation is.
It is 10 episodes we've done, and so they start airing again October 11th. And, yeah, I mean, it's 10 episodes, 10 incredible cases, some phenomenal evidence we caught, and we're really excited. I mean, I think it's going to be great. It really is.
I'm kind of torn here between the chat questions and the phone calls, but the chat questions came first. I'm going to see how many of these we can get in. Chrissy wants to know what's different about this show as compared to Ghost Hunters.
Well, Ghost Hunters was more about the TAPS team, and we were out there investigating. And like I said, no matter where we investigated, it always seemed like they only wanted to show these big locations because I had final say on where we investigated, but they had final say on what aired. This is more about just getting back to the roots, going into these residential homes and helping out these families who are scared or their children who are scared, and they're looking for answers. And the nice thing is we're really able to dive deep into the historical information on the properties as well. So you're able to see a full-fledged investigation and how it goes. And we're at these properties for a week straight. We take over the house. We go out, we do the historical research, see if any of the stories that they've heard have any truth behind them, or any of the history of the property that they know of has any truth behind it, and really come to some serious answers.
All right. I'm going to ask this one before we take another call here, because this is something that's been popping up all over the place, and it's got a lot of people in a bit of a stir here. But the basics of this question, Jay, and I know the answer, are you and Grant still friends?
I'm going to punch him in the face if I say no. Honestly, Grant and I chose to go different ways. I wish him the best. you know, we had the opportunity to go back and to actually do Ghost Hunters. I didn't want to do Ghost Hunters with a new team, and that was a big factor when I chose not to, and so I left. And then they, I guess after that, they went to Grant, and Grant was okay with doing it with a new team. Do I agree with that? No, but you know, Grant's going to make his own decisions. He's a big boy, and go from there.
Is in Ghost Nation, is the TAPS organization the investigative organization, or do you?
Well, I still run TAPS, but this is more, it's about actually we're using a UPRO, United Paranormal Research Organization, which is more of just a network of teams from all around that are working together. So TAPS still is there. I own TAPS. The TAPS website's still there, still the top visited paranormal website in the world. But we wanted to also incorporate a whole new creation when it came to the show.
We might be having a little bit of trouble with the phone lines here. I'm not sure what's going on. But another chat question is your thoughts, and I'm not sure how this relates to the new show, but your thoughts on Ghost Adventures. That show's been around a long time.
Yeah, I spoke with Zach when I was coming over to the Travel Channel, and because I wanted to make sure I wasn't gonna, you know, create any hard feelings or step on anybody's toes. I have a lot of respect for Zach and his crew. We do things very differently, but I think that's what helps push the field forward, is that we're very different in our approaches. But you know, we have the utmost respect for each other. I think Ghost Adventures, I think those guys seem like great guys. I've never actually hung out with them. Steve has. Hopefully someday I'll get the chance, but I have the utmost respect for them and what they've been able to accomplish. And to be honest with you, they've done phenomenal things at Travel Channel.
Another question from our chat room is, will there be any other celebrities that will be guests? I know you have Meatloaf and some others were on Ghost Hunters. Anybody else coming on?
Actually, Meatloaf has been texting me wanting to come on and do the show, as well as some others. Meatloaf took a bad fall. He ended up breaking his collarbone and stuff. But he sent me a text just about 2 weeks ago saying he'll be ready for second season.
All right, cool. All right, let's even grab one more phone call question here. This is Carl in Missouri. Hey, Carl, welcome to the show.
Hi. What's up with 3 a.m. being the best time to look for ghosts?
Honestly, that's not. That's just somebody making that up, and that's the whole mockery of, you know, there was claims that Jesus died on the cross at 3:33 or whatever, and it was supposed to be the total opposite of it. And a lot of people have brought that up and tried to make it seem like it's something, you know, because a horror movie showing people waking up at 3 a.m. And there's really nothing to that. I mean, paranormal activity happens all the time, through the day, through the night. So you can set up cameras at any point and try to catch it. So, but great question.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Carl. We appreciate you listening in Missouri. All right, that's going to run. We're running out of time here. Welcome back, Jay. It's great to have you here again.
It's been a blast.
It doesn't feel so lonely here anymore.
No, it doesn't. And a big thank you to our guest, Rob Young. Make sure you check out his book. Check out the Beyond Reality Radio site and also head over to facebook.com/Beyond Reality Radio. That's going to do it for us. You listen to Jason and JV, Beyond Reality Radio. Catch you all tomorrow.
Beyond Reality Radio is hosted by Jason Hawes and JV Johnson and produced by Alexandria Johnson and Slick Eddie Edwards for Entercom Radio. Beyond Reality Radio is distributed by Westwood One Radio Networks. Stop by our Facebook page and say hello. Follow the hosts on Facebook as well. For Jason Hawes, follow at jasonhawes.taps. For JV Johnson, follow at JVJParanormal. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Radio or you have a suggestion for a guest, contact Slick Eddie Edwards at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com. Be sure to visit our chat room as well at beyondrealityradio.com. Thanks for listening.